What is going on, everybody? Just watched a, I don't even know how you describe that Monday night game. But you probably have some better adjectives than I do, because I got nothing good to say. And we will dive into that bad boy right off the top. A lot happened this weekend. I thought Sunday was an excellent day of football. Obviously, the Pittsburgh-Tennessee game, that Sunday night game. Have some thoughts on definitely on Seattle. I mean, something came to light in that game that I don't know. I got red flagged with them. And really, I have had it red flagged the whole year. And they'll probably keep winning despite of it, but it's going to bite them in the ass eventually. Antonio Brown coming to a team that is absolutely rolling. I mean, the Bucs just won 45-20. The week before I turned the game off at halftime when they were playing the Packers, I don't even know what that score might have been, like 60-0. I mean, they have destroyed their opponents the last 2 weeks. This Raider game was a little tighter, but their high end, once they get rolling, was just on a completely different level. And adding Antonio Brown, pretty risky, man. Belichick, obviously, was pretty locked into Niners, Patriots, till that game was over at halftime. And Cam stinks. Belichick's roster stinks. I'm not phased. Like, I'm not going to say Belichick stinks as a coach, but his team's awful. It really, really awful. The Niners absolutely destroyed them. They just don't have any good players. And one thing we've realized is Cam Newton, I think, got us all really excited on that Sunday night game against Seattle. Well, the human we've seen the last several games, even before Corona, but definitely these last couple games, he was terrible versus the Niners. I mean, absolutely awful. So we'll dive in. I got some thoughts there on Belichick, and then we'll just kind of fire around the league. Like I said, keep subscribing to this podcast. Transitional period will be, who knows, but just subscribe to this podcast probably in a couple weeks, but you know, you never know. But subscribe to Three and Out Podcast. If you got Apple or iTunes, I appreciate you leaving a little review. Helps people sell it. You know, we're trying to make money. We're not a charity around here. And at John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. I answer your questions here on the show, as we call it, the People Show. But let's start with the Monday night game, and we got to start with the Bears. Listen, Matt Nagy's my guy. I've known him for over a decade. I'm a big fan. And they're 5-2. I mean, they just got, you know, they got mauled. They got destroyed. They got a kind of a garbage time touchdown from Eddie Jackson to make the score. I mean, I just turned the game off with like 5 minutes left. It was 24-10. So if the score changes, I mean, it's just garbage time points. Nick Foles just isn't that good. Now, he's better than Trubisky, but he's just not that good. He's a slow twitch player who caught lightning in a bottle with the Eagles. Kind of twice, but really the one time. Well, when you look back on that Eagles team, they had an excellent offensive line. Jason Peters, Jason Kelsey, Brandon Brooks, Lane Johnson. This Bears team, like, they do have some offensive talent, right? Their wide receivers, Miller, Allen Robinson, the tight end they drafted, I think Notre Dame kid. Jimmy Graham's still decent for them. They have some offensive weapons. Their offensive line is putrid. If you have a bad offensive line in 2018, 19, and 20, these last several years, you can be a good team. We've seen it. We saw it last year with the Minnesota Vikings. You can win games if you have a good defense and good offensive skill guys. And the Bears, they're going to end up with 8, 9, 10 wins. Like, they're already 5-2. Like, they're not going to not win more games. Their defense is good. And their offense is going to look better than I hope it did tonight. But their offense, when you have a bad offensive line, you can look like trash because you can't block anybody. And these last handful of years, there have never been the amount of athletes at the defensive line position that have come in. And the reality is the same amount of good players on the offensive line positions have not come into the league. And clearly Ryan Pace has not done a good job. Now, Matt Nagy didn't do a good job tonight. I'm sure he'll say that after the game. They got out-coached. They got outplayed. They got out-physicaled. The Rams beat the shit out of them tonight. Now, part of that might be as the Rams last week against the Niners on Sunday Night Football got punked, got destroyed, and they brought it to the Bears. I also think there's an element of this. When you're a great defensive team and your offense is not carrying the weight, and every time you look up, it's 10-0, it's 13-0, it's 7-3, you know, it's just like, we're doing our job, and you guys are scoring no points. We can only take so much. The thing with football, unlike the majority of businesses, The product are the humans. So they got human emotions. And the Bears clearly have enough talent on defense. They are really talented on defense. Definitely talented enough. Probably not. They're not as well coached. Chuck Pagano is not nearly as good as Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio, you know, at the end of the day, probably should have been a lifetime defensive coordinator. Like I said about Todd Bowles, just know your role. I don't blame him for taking a shot. He was never going to be a head coach. Elway gave him the chance, and God, the Broncos are terrible. But Chuck Pagano is a dramatic step down from Vic. And you see it with their defense. But their defense is still fine because they have so much talent. But you can't overcome a putrid offense. The inability to score points. Because I don't know if you know this, but in sports, baseball, basketball, football, you have to outscore the opponent. And in most games, especially in the NFL, like teams are going to score, I don't know, over like 17 points. Great scoring defenses are like 15. Elite scoring defenses are like 15. So middle of the road, solid defense is probably, you know, low 20s. You got to score some points to win. And you watch the Bears, they not only struggle to score points, they struggle to move the ball. And it's a combination of their offensive line and quarterback play. And when your offensive line is awful, if you have a great quarterback, like we saw years with Roethlisberger, with Rodgers, you can overcome it. You can have bad moments, but you can ultimately overcome it. The Bears' quarterback situation is shitty. I mean, Mitch Trubisky is one of the biggest whiffs we can think of in recent memory. Like, you could say Baker, we'll get into him a little later. Might not be, whatever. He's still an NFL starter, right? I mean, Sam Darnold, you can say, yeah, he's an NFL starter. You look at Mitch Trubisky, he's never going to be an NFL starter again. I don't even know a team that would want him as the backup. So, I just think that, and then you go to Nick Foles. Nick Foles is not an ideal starting quarterback. In a perfect world, Nick Foles is like what Ryan Fitzpatrick is about to be. He's there to support you. He's there to help you study. And if you get into a pinch and your guy gets injured or he's got to start a game or two, he can come out of relief. There's a reason guys are relief pitchers and there are a reason guys are starters. Now, if you're a big baseball guy, you can, you know, it's kind of been skewed in 2020. But back when I was growing up, there were starters and there were relievers. You know, certain guys couldn't throw as many innings. Certain guys would just be able to throw one hard inning, whatever the reason was. But ultimately, it got separated. And that happens in football. And some guys become really good backup quarterbacks. And I think Nick Foles is a fantastic backup quarterback. But when you have to start game in and game out, he gets exposed. Especially when the offensive line can't block anybody because he can't really move. Nick Foles, it's going to sound like an oxymoron. He's a very good athlete, but he is extremely slow and just heavy-footed. So he can't move very well. He's a big-time athlete. He was a great high school basketball player. I think he was recruited to play at Michigan State. But if he moves around like one of the slowest players on the field. So just the casual guy, would if you're just watching Nick Foles, you would think he was a low-level athlete. But he's not. He's actually just really slow. And everything about him is just kind of slow twitch, right? You watch those guys on Sunday Night Football, Russell, Kyler. I mean, that's fast twitch. Even like Rodgers and Mahomes, whatever they do is kind of with a purpose. Even watch Jared Goff, who is on the athletic scale of 2020 starting quarterbacks, would be near the bottom. And look how much faster he just moves around than Nick Foles. The Bears have a quarterback problem. That is not going to change this year. Their offense is just, they're not going to be able to score many points, bottom line. And you watch the Rams, like, they have some high-end players. I mean, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey are stars. I do think, though, like, I don't judge the Monday night game to, like, the bar for them. Because in their division, they have, we can probably look at different statistics. In my opinion, I would say Kansas City and Seattle are the two best offenses. When I close my eyes, I think about those guys throwing bombs and scoring points. Seattle can score on anybody. Kansas City can score on anybody. Well, who do the Rams got to play twice? Them. Kyler Murray and that offense is just remarkable to watch. With Hopkins, Christian Kirk, Kyler is just a star. And Cliff, like, Cliff's a good offensive coach. That offense is big time. And Kyle Shanahan, last time I checked, is one of the best offensive coaches in the league. And when Debo, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Mozart will come back, like, the Niners are loaded with offensive weapons. And we saw the Niners shove the Rams around last week. Now, Seattle and Arizona won't really shove you around, but they'll just throw away from Jalen Ramsey. Now, the one thing the Rams will have against Seattle is Jalen Ramsey will follow DK Metcalf. It'll be a little more difficult with the Cardinals because, okay, you can follow Hopkins. That's fine. They'll just throw it to Kirk and Fitzgerald and other guys. So I just don't know if their defense is going to be good enough to overcome an offense that they do have some weapons. Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp are studs. And their run game is just good because McVay's good at scheming it. Well, like when you watch Goff, and I'm a Goff fan, but he has his limitations. And he's not like going to slice and dice really good teams. Now, luckily for his division, Seattle's defense is awful. Arizona's defense is not that good. And the Niners, their pass rush is not going to be the same. And he only has to play him one more time, though he's already lost to him. But I look at the Rams and, like, I don't know if they're good enough to, you know, really compete to win the NFC. But they're clearly good enough to, like, they're going to be in the playoffs. And I think this division with the Niners, the Rams, the Cardinals, is just the cream's going to rise. Like, do they all just beat each other up? Or does one team in the division win, go 5-1? And right now, the Cardinals have the early edge because they're 2-0 in the division. The Rams are 0-1 because they lost to the Cardinals. Seattle hasn't played any teams in the division. They play the Niners this week. So I think top to bottom, it's the best division in football. I mean, it might sound like I'm talking shit about the Rams. I think they're probably a 10-win team. Like, I think they're good. I'm going to judge them not on the Bears. I judge them how they play the Niners, Seattle, and Arizona. And right now, I have talked a lot of shit about the Arizona Cardinals because their coach has never won anything, and I do not trust the defensive coordinator. And as you saw on Sunday night, like, and while I'll talk about Russ here coming up, but, like, I love the quarterback. I love DeAndre Hopkins. Larry Fitzgerald is, like, my favorite player in recent memory, just in terms of player slash person. Like, I mean, who's not? So it's just, how are they going to look when they play a division? Because it does feel like all the teams in the division match up pretty well against them. And if they slip, like, if they can go 4-2 in the division, they're in the playoffs. So if they go 2-4, they'd be in some trouble. And they play the Niners, they got shoved around. So I'm just fascinated to watch it play out. Like, they're going to, the one thing the Rams do, and like Seattle, and like the Niners, is they typically take care of business against non-common opponents, where they drop games and just is going to be in the division. Like, they do take care of the Bears. They beat them now 2 years in a row. Like, I'm confident in that. That's what the team I'll talk about, like the Arizona Cardinals, like, I'm not as confident in games like we saw tonight that they're just going to win. But they will, I mean, they're playing well in the division. I think the NFC West has kind of separated itself. You know, it's got four teams that if you told anyone that they're going to be in the playoffs, we'd all believe you. You know, I'm texting with people this weekend in the league that are like, God, the Niners kind of get their mojo back. Their coach is so good, they can win. I mean, the Cardinals just, I'm not backing off my take on the coaching staff, but their players and the quarterback is just phenomenal. Now, I do give Cliff credit. He pushed for him, and it's worked out well. But I'm just, you tell me these teams in the division when they play, I'm sign me up because I'll be there. But nice win for the Rams, nice bounce back after getting their butt kicked. Okay, let's dive into the Sunday night football game. And I think NBC executives were doing cartwheels once they were able to kick the Raiders off of Sunday night football with their kind of corona debacle and just. Obviously, they'd love to have Tom Brady, but they couldn't risk the game getting, you know, whatever. I mean, you just can't trust the Raiders, and especially even to play well in a primetime game. You just don't know what you're going to get just to bring up Russ and bring up Kyler Murray. Obviously, Russ, you know, him, Rodgers, and Mahomes, probably, and Brady, poster boys of the league. Kyler Murray, this young superstar. And let's start with Seattle. One thing that really jumped out to me was they have a major, major issue. And there are just some fundamental things that never change in life, ever. Whether you're talking about football or whether you're talking about you want to own a good restaurant, make good food. Want to have a good television show, get a good script and hire good actors. Want to create funny content, find funny people. Like, there's just some basic premises to different, you know, industries in life. You want to win the Super Bowl, you have to have a good quarterback and a good pass rush. A.K.A. good defense. But I think as we've seen, if you have a good pass rush, usually your defense is pretty good. And that's a problem for Seattle. They don't have a good pass rush. Five teams in the league have less sacks. They're you know, single-digit sacks right now. They're in the bottom third of the league when it comes to getting after the quarterback. And their best defensive player, by a country mile, the guy they traded two first-round picks and a second-round pick, which I like the guy. He's my type player, is not going to help that out. He definitely not going to cover anybody whenever Jamal Adams comes back. And yeah, he's a good blitzer, but you know, if your safety is the best pass rusher on your team, I'm even giving you a bigger red flag. And listen, I've said this over and over and over again. In my 36 years of life, I just had a birthday. If you look, I'm getting old. I have a handful of just when I think favorite players ever. My favorite player when I was young by, you know, was Steve Young. And you could probably throw in Jerry Rice there. But Steve was just, every kid on the playground wanted to be Steve Young thrown to Jerry Rice. I mean, those guys were the shit where I was growing up. And Steve was just such a fun quarterback to watch. And then as the Niners became kind of rivals with the Favre Packers, like, who didn't like Favre? Like, usually it's just certain quarterbacks have a little more flair. I have a ton of respect for Manning and Brady. I don't have much in common with those guys. They're 6'5", super rich. Like, no one can relate. If you met Steve Young, he's not that tall. I actually met Brett Favre once when I worked in Philly. He's like a little taller. But Russell Wilson, I've stood right next to him. He's basically my size. He has no business being this good. And the game is way less violent now. But I do think that Russell Wilson is my favorite player to watch ever. Like, I just never, when I watch Seattle play, go, you know, I regret watching that football game. Ever. I mean, he is that much fun. He's everything you want in a star quarterback. He's a superstar. And their offense, this DK Metcalf, that draft pick is going to go down as an all-timer. I mean, it's just a remarkable pick. I also texted one time a couple buddies, like, should he go in the top 10 right after he ran the combine? That's what I was thinking. Now, I hadn't watched him in college or anything. He's a star. Like, their offense is elite. Their offense is dominant. But you can't win the Super Bowl if you can't play any defense. And I was texting with a buddy with the Chiefs, and he's like, you know, kind of reminded me of us, you know, in 18. And we were just in the middle of the game, you know, and I was like, yeah, kind of, I thought that too. And then I kind of thought about it over the last, you know, 24 hours. And I was like, I don't know. The Chiefs defense was way better in 18 than Seattle's defense. Why? Well, Dee Ford made the Pro Bowl that year as a pass rusher. He had 13 sacks. I'll tell you who the Seattle Seahawks do not have. And trust me, Dee Ford, who knows if he ever's going to play football again. But that given year, he was really good. And he made an impact for him. Now, ultimately, he probably cost the Chiefs, right, in the in that AFC Championship game, the offsides. But Seattle, who's even going to be in that position for them? Like, he was a legitimate star passer. They also had Chris Jones, who hadn't quite become what he became the following year, but he was still damn good. Like, Chris Jones and that version of Dee Ford are infinitely better than anything Seattle has. I'm watching Seattle. They just do not have the players. They have no impact up front. And I saw it last year with the Niners. Like, Richard Sherman was good last year, but they played with Emmanuel Mosley, who actually turned out to be okay, but he's an undrafted free agent. Kwaski Tart, Jimmy Ward aren't great cover guys. But their secondary looked unreal because their pass rush was awesome. And watching those Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas teams, their talent in the defensive backfield was good. Cam Chancellor couldn't really cover anybody. But their pass rush, that front with Averill, with Bennett, with some of the dudes they had, were just unstoppable, unblockable. I remember going to games in those peak years against those early, when LOB was kind of coming into their own. The defensive line did not get enough credit. Michael Bennett, listen, whatever you think about him personally, he was an ass kicker on the field. And Cliff Averill was an incredible speed rusher off the edge. Like, they were getting after the quarterback. And this Seattle team is just like, is Bobby Wagner still what he was? No, I don't think so. You know, he's solid. KJ Wright, those guys are solid. Those two are the least of their worries. And when Jamal comes back, he's basically a third linebacker. And I'm not trying to, like, beat on Seattle because they had a bad loss. I think Seattle's a better team than Arizona. It took a 3-pick. I mean, I have to go back and look. Like, that's got to be one of the worst games of Russell's career just in terms of interceptions. I know he had like a 5-pick game. Remember a couple years ago someone told me about on Twitter against the Packers. that NFC Championship game when they won on that onside kick that they ultimately, I think, lost to New England in the Malcolm Butler pick game. I think he had four in that game. But, I mean, he had two in the second half of this game. And the one to Isaiah Simmons, who's kind of a bust right now, he's not really playing, was a nice play by the rookie. But that doesn't look like Russell Wilson. And that pick to Patrick Peterson in the back of the end zone definitely didn't look like Russell Wilson. It took those multiple interceptions in the second half for this game to go to overtime. Right? And then Pete Carroll, you know, kind of wussed out on letting Russell play it. But given the clock position at the end of the game, I have no issue running the ball, letting the clock, and punting it back. It was really good drive by Kyler. But the pushback would be like, Pete, your defense sucks. Your defense is awful. You don't have any impact players. And part of the reason they had impact players on those original really good teams when Russell was nowhere near what he is now, because they hit on a lot of picks. And I'm not talking first-round picks. Bobby Wagner was a second-rounder. Sherman was a fifth-rounder. I think Cam was a third- or fourth-rounder. Like, Earl was a star. He was a high pick, but most of those other guys were not. Pretty sure they got Michael Bennett for not much. They signed Cliff Averill as just a free agent. Anyone could have had the guy. Like, they did a great – they haven't really done a good job. And they've had to kind of double down and spend a lot on Jamal Adams, who, again, I like Jamal Adams. I'd want him on my team. But when you factor in he can't really cover, you know, that's a lot to give up for a guy that can't cover. So they're not going to have a first-round pick for the next couple of years. I just know this. Who goes consistently to restaurants that have bad food? It doesn't happen. The best restaurants in America make good food. It's just consistently. The teams that win the Super Bowl have a good defense. Because it's the price of admissions having a good quarterback, right? Tom Brady, Mahomes. Like, just think of some of the, obviously, that year with Foles, Brady, Russell, Manning. Think of the quarterbacks this decade that have won Super Bowls, right? The price of admission is having a Hall of Fame quarterback. Rodgers, just that's the deal. Roethlisberger, I mean, just that's. But you need a good defense. Without a good defense, you ain't winning the Super Bowl. So unless something dramatically changes and they can make some crazy trade for a defensive lineman, which is going to be tough because they don't have any picks because of the Jamal Adams thing. Like, I'm not some anti-Seattle guy. You're like, Middlecliff, you just like the Niners. Yeah, I like Seattle too. Like, I love Russell Wilson. He's a favorite player in the league. But I'll tell you this. Like, their record's going to be good. They're going to end up 13-3. I would not pick them to win Super Bowl. I actually think they have no chance to win the Super Bowl with this defense. Okay, one team that's emerging as a clear league power is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They look really good. Tom looks really good. And they're doing something that's a little crazy. Now I've said it over and over on this pod. I'm pro-risk. I admire people that take risks. I've never been one to stay in the slow lane. I don't try to associate with people that stay in the slow lane. I like risk takers, and I appreciate them. And one thing I think we've all learned, probably this year more than ever, is there is risk in fucking everything we do. Who would have known if you started a business in 2020, you might have failed, not because your product wasn't good enough, not because your restaurant wasn't good enough, not because of anything you did, but because the government mandated you close your doors. In my 36 years of life, that's never happened, right? Now, if you broke laws or whatever, they might take away your business license or take away your alcohol license if you're a business or, you know, a restaurant or whatever. There are individual things that can... But if you were just following the rules and doing everything as planned in about, you know, early April, you were told to shut it down, close the doors. And it was, you know, 10 years into a bull market, a lot of people had got aggressive and risked a lot of things. And we've all seen the numbers. It's been catastrophic for many businesses. And I think the thing that hurts people like me the most for those type people is for many of them, it was completely out of their control. They had no control of any of the restrictions levied by the government in during this virus and pandemic. It's been awful. But it is a good lesson. Like, you just never know. And some of the richest people I've known have always told me, like, when their businesses are at their peak or they've never made more money, they're just like, it could all change tomorrow. And now the older I get, like, you kind of get some perspective. I mean, Monday, I'm recording this. The stock market today, I'm sure many people listening, it was a bloodbath. You never know. I lost, you know, five figures today. And on some of my stocks, I was way up. I was thinking, like, should I cash out a little bit, take myself a little commission, a little Matthew McConaughey style? Ended up not doing it. You know, there's not as much money to take out now, I promise you that. Now, I'm not worried. It's a long-term play. But you just never know. So I understand, and one thing I learned when I was in the NFL, a position of strength can become a position of weakness very fast. Just because, you know, on September 1st or October 15th, you look at your roster and you see five Pro Bowlers on your offensive line, hypothetically, right? Or a wide receiver group that you think is one of the best in the NFL. Two injuries later, you could be in shambles, and that could be a weakness. We see it happen all the time, especially now with injuries, right? So I understand making bold plays on players. And that's what it looks like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are signing Antonio Brown, will do. Now, I knew people with the Raiders when they signed Antonio Brown, and some of the stories I heard post-Antonio Brown were crazy. And the things were never based, I guess crazy would be strong, but just what you would think of with a nut job, right? You know, just full-on disrespect in meetings, not showing up. Obviously, the helmet debacle is publicized. The one thing you never heard, though, work ethic on the practice field when he showed was fantastic. And he's, you know, an elite player. He's never been out of shape, and he never hasn't dominated. But everything else gets a little crazy. Now, Tom, because once you become a certain figure, you feel you can take more risks. I've done some reading, a.k.a. some listening. I'm a big audiobook guy. I've tried to just listen to different audiobooks. Definitely over the last couple months, I'm like, I've watched everything on Netflix Amazon Prime, and I need to read. So I'm like, I don't really want to read, so I'll listen. And I get audiobooks, and I'm an audio consumer, so I'll listen to audiobooks. I listened to Bob Iger's book just about his kind of career, and he was the CEO of Disney for a long time. I think technically he still is. He was going to retire, then the pandemic hit, and he kind of came back. Fascinating story. Obviously had a lot of big hits because they got to the point like, we're Disney, we can do anything. They merged with Pixar, you know, Steve Jobs. That was huge. Obviously they took over Marvel. I don't know if you're a movie watcher, that the Iron Mans and the Spider-Mans made Disney a shitload of money. But they also made a lot of mistakes. And he talked about it in the book of like, we thought we could do no wrong. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire became a big hit, and they tried to like double down on that. He had several television shows that big time flopped. You don't hear about that. You know, obviously ESPN, which they owned, they obviously have several television shows that consistently flop, but we only talk about the good stuff, right? First Take has been a hit. So we talk about First Take. I don't watch it, but I'm saying economically for them. And obviously Disney, like, not everything you do is going to go smoothly. And you have to know that in business as you do in football. But Tampa has a pretty good thing going. And their wide receiver room, and I would just say their weapons in general, are the strength of their team. And I get Tom Brady is surely pounding the table for him. And unlike I saw it got tweeted out that Tom Brady sent Tony Robbins Antonio Brown's way. And listen, I think Antonio Brown is insane. But everyone I saw quoting the tweet, all the media people, talked a bunch of shit. Do you know what I would do if someone sent Tony Robbins my way? I would say thank you. I thought that was awesome. I'm like, I commend Tom for doing that. And maybe it helped him, maybe it didn't. But, I mean, how many people have done anything? You know, obviously Tom knows him as a friend, so it wouldn't be like Tom sending him to me or you or some guy that, like, he doesn't know. And selfishly, Antonio Brown can help Tom Brady. But, like, I'm impressed by that move. Like, that's why Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback. He's a high-level individual. He does high-level shit. The media, who just always wants misery, of course they hate that. Like, I actually think, and listen, I'm not some Antonio Brown defender. I would not sign him if I was them. Tom wants him, and I think what Tom has meant so far to their team, there's got to be a give and take in any relationship, personally or professionally. And after Tom kind of proved his worth, and now that Antonio is clear, and maybe if I was Bruce Arians or Jason Light, maybe I talked to Tony Robbins and asked what he thought of him. And I saw Bruce Arians gave a quote that he thinks he's matured. But the Tampa Bay Bucs now back-to-back weeks, they beat the shit out of the Green Bay Packers. The game was actually close against the Raiders. They ended up winning it 45-20. Their high end now as a team is they can be the best team in the NFC. You're the best team in the NFC. That means you can win the Super Bowl. So they are taking a risk. Now, it's not a very expensive one, and they can surely get out of it if he acts like an idiot. But I don't know The upside is they get one of the best players we've ever seen to go along with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and their running backs and the greatest quarterback we've ever seen with a really good coach and a good defense, and they dominate and they kill everyone. Where it goes poorly is all of a sudden he starts acting weird. And I bet that's where if Jason Light was here, it's like, we're not guaranteeing him any money. If Mike Evans says he hates him, our wide receiver coach doesn't like him, if he starts acting weird to guys, we will cut him. Now, part of that is the Patriots did that when there were like sexual assault allegations. And I always struggle with the media acts like allegations are facts. I mean, we have enough information now. An allegation is not necessarily true or false. We don't know. And so I never know when these things come out. Unless I was there, I can't tell you. No one knows except the people that are there. So I don't know what happened to Antonio Brown over the years with that. But when that happened, the Patriots had no choice. They had to get rid of him. And it's been, you know, written about. Tom was not happy with that. It's like, Tom, like, we didn't have a choice. We got to get rid of this guy. Like, we've had issues before in the past. We have zero tolerance with that. We're not giving Antonio Brown the benefit of the doubt. A guy the Raiders just cut because he burned his feet off and refused to practice with a normal helmet. Like, I'm sorry. That guy didn't get the benefit of the doubt. Like, have the Buccaneers had the conversation with Tom and told him, like, if he gets squirrely, if we get uncomfortable with his actions, we can cut him. Or if that happens and we cut him, is Tom going to be mad? Because now that Tom is with the Buccaneers, like, he's been the most important player they've clearly signed in a decade. You know, I mean, he's changed the franchise. And he's going to make them, he's immediately already made them a Super Bowl contender. And they're down a slippery slope. I wouldn't have done it, though I understand why they did do that. I just hope they've talked it out with Tom and told him kind of the baseline of what's expected and what will go. Because the Tony Robbins and all that stuff is, and Antonio Brown's been on the low and clearly done a much better job of staying under the radar. But the moment you join the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you're back under the radar. And everyone's watching you. I guess under the radar, you wouldn't be seen. You're back on the radar. Everyone's seeing you. Everyone's talking to you. You're doing Zoom meetings. You're at practice. You're in these games. You're in the spotlight again. And that's, to me, where Antonio Brown showed he's really struggled. I think Belichick's the best coach ever in the NFL. I think he's arguably the best coach in sports history. His team's terrible. And they are headed down a slippery slope of not mediocrity, of a 3 or 4 win team. Cam Newton, the guy that played on Sunday against the Niners, their team does not have close to the talent of the Niners. But the version of that Patriot team versus the Niners was much worse because of how shitty Cam Newton was. He struggled to complete basic routes. Like a basic out route, he didn't probably get it within 10 feet of the guy. It skipped on the ground. His release looks funky. His ball's not coming out of his hand. He has no accuracy. He's an awful player. Now, the Niners have got their juice back, and their offense is really good. Kyle's a big-time coach, and their team has just kind of found their mojo again after the Rams game and then this game. I was not expecting the Patriots to beat them. I put money on the Niners. So nothing shocked me necessarily about the outcome. The one thing that did shock me is how bad Cam is right now. Cam doesn't look like a starting NFL quarterback. Cam looks like a guy that should be on a practice squad. And I was saying probably a month ago that I thought this guy was the steal of the year. Because after that Seattle game, I don't know how you couldn't think that. Well, that guy has disappeared. Whether, you know, he got corona, but he's just been bad now for a month. He's been, ever since that game, he has not been good. And if you're not accurate, you can't play quarterback. Simple, period, point blank. I think Belichick will know after this season what his long-term outlook is for the rest of the year. They beat the Bills. Who knows? Maybe Cam just had a couple off weeks. If they get rolled again, now the Bills, Josh Allen, who I was kind of, I was stroking for a little while, he's lost a little bit of his mojo. And the Bills' defense isn't that good. Hell, the Jets, a team that I also bet against this weekend, covered the spread. And that game was actually pretty close, and the Bills really struggled against the Jets, which they should not struggle against the Jets. I think we all agree the Jets are not going to win a football game this year. But Bill Belichick and the Patriots, if they lose this game, they're 2-5. And they're not going to make the playoffs. It's over. The AFC is going to have, you know, probably 7 teams with 10-plus wins. And the Bills would just probably cruise the division. But the point is, his team sucks. The talent is not on the roster. He had a bunch of opt-outs, true. But N'Keal Harry, who I would have drafted too if I was him, is not good. Edelman is old. They don't have any other talent at tight end or wide receiver. Their offensive line is just kind of meh. Defensively, even their backups, which most of their starters opted out beside like McCourty and Gilmore, stink. They don't have any talent. Why not just bottom out? And if someone told me in the NFL, he's like, you know what you should do a topic on? I said, what? He's like, why wouldn't Belichick ensure the Jets couldn't get the number one pick? Because let's say there are multiple teams. I don't think the Jags are going to win another game. It's going to be difficult for the Giants to win probably more than three games. What if Belichick threw those two games against the Jets? Now, Bill is a good enough coach where he probably couldn't get the number one pick. They already have two wins. They'd probably end up with four or five. But he could make sure that the fucking Jets don't get it. And I think I was like, you know, it's not really Belichick style. But if his team's so terrible, if all of a sudden they're 2-7 or 3-10, why not? Lose both the Jets games on purpose. When you think Belichick and you think the teams he hates, I think two teams. He can't stand the Colts because he hates Ryan Grigson. He hated Polian. He hates the Colts. Despises them. He liked Peyton Manning. He hated their management. And he was right. Grigson turned him in for Deflategate. Polian was always bitching and moaning about his corners. I'm on Team Belichick on both those two arguments. The other team that he clearly hates is the New York Jets. And the irony is the Jets, the majority of his career with the Patriots have been zero factor. They had a couple years with Rex Ryan, but other than that, I bet if we looked up his career record against the Jets in his 20-plus years in New England, he's beaten the crap out of them. But he hates them. I mean, he hates the franchise. For maybe it was the way he left. I don't know. But what if he screwed up their path to get Trevor Lawrence? And he would not do that if his team was competing for the playoffs. He just wouldn't. And even when Colin Coward was talking about Belichick tanking the season, I never bought it. That's not how Belichick's wired. He's too competitive, and he's just too good of a coach. But once you watch his team, and it turns out Cam Newton sucks, we also can tell Jared Stidham isn't that good. We already know Brian Hoyer sucks. His quarterbacks are awful. You can't win in the NFL when you don't have that much talent and your quarterback plays bad. I don't care if you got Bill Belichick, if you got Tom Landry, or you got Bill Parcells. You're not going to win many games. But the Jets are on a collision course with Trevor Lawrence. And if I was Trevor Lawrence or I was Justin Fields, the one thing I would do is I would refuse to play in Jacksonville. The franchise is just a god-awful franchise. They never win, and it's a tiny market where you can't make any money. A lot of people think that the guys should do that to New York. I got news for you. They will not do that to New York. Way too much money to be weighed with the Jets. And for as bad as the Jets are, they have been successful in the last couple decades. And they're going to have a new coach. So I just don't see any player doing that with the Jets. The market's too big. Too much cash to be made. With the Jaguars, I would do that. The Giants, who knows if they would take a quarterback, what they would do with Daniel Jones. We'll see. Texans, I guess they don't have the pick. The Dolphins would, but the Dolphins would trade the pick. The Patriots have to start thinking about if they lose this week, and to me this is a kitchen sink week. The Bills, who I don't even know if they're that good anymore, which is crazy because I thought they were one of the best teams in the league a couple weeks ago, but that's not the case anymore. I think Belichick would have to start thinking, Bill Belichick, big picture, how do I ruin the Jets season and position myself to change my franchise? So next year I can have top five picks, a top five pick, and then picks in every round and make sure that the New York Jets don't get Trevor Lawrence. That to me is where you pivot. And that wasn't my original idea. I was scouting the NFL. I thought the idea was crazy. And then once I watched the Niners play the Patriots, I'm like, actually that idea makes a lot of sense because Belichick not just owes it to his owner, but owes it to himself. Like this team is nowhere near with Brady leaving, Gronk leaving. He's missed on a lot of players in recent drafts. Like he just doesn't have any impact young guys. You watch their team in the first and second rounders, there's no impact. That's on him. For the majority of the last 20 years, it didn't matter because he had Tom, he had Gronk, he had McCourty, he had Hightower. They'd always get back like a Jamie Collins. They'd make a trade for Danny Shelton. They'd make a trade for whoever. They'd make a trade for Mohamed Sanu. Who cares? Turns out they gave up a second rounder. Mohamed Sanu's not even in the NFL. Well, the moment you don't have a quarterback, all that stuff matters because you don't have the talent around him. Like, part of the reason, like, the Niners, like, right now, Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't been very good this year. Well, in their wins, it doesn't matter. They got George Kittle. They got Brandon Ayuk. They got Deebo Samuel. Still got Fred Warner. They got impact players. They got Trent Williams. They got impact players at other positions. Raheem Mostert. They got good backups. You know, guys that can make plays. The Patriots don't have any guys that can make plays. You're watching the Niners play the Patriots. You're like, this is varsity versus JV. Belichick's no dummy. He understands that. And if Cam Newton's going to play like shit and Jared Stidham just isn't good, to me, the move is just ensure you keep losing. But make sure you lose those two Jets games. Okay, let's dive into some stuff from this weekend. We'll just go kind of rapid fire of things I saw, things that happened, some thoughts. Start on Saturday. I talked last week about Justin Fields. I just did a little drinking this week, so wasn't super locked in on Saturday, but did catch a good amount of the Ohio State game. He's going to be a really good player. He is a good player. Ohio State's stacked. They should be a playoff team. You would think maybe Michigan give them a better game, Minnesota. Their schedule's pretty easy. They would play Penn State because they're on their side. But Penn State loses to Indiana. Obviously, Clemson's really good. Alabama, who, you know, I love Alabama, but Jalen Waddle broke his ankle or leg or foot or something. I think his ankle. He's out for the season. That's a big blow to Alabama. I mean, their defense stinks. Stinks would be strong, but it's nowhere near what it once was. They're an offensive team. And Najee Harris, baller. Devontae Smith, baller. And Jalen Smith, baller. And now with no, you know, Waddle, it's not going to be as easy. I hope it doesn't impact his draft stock that much. I doubt it will, as long as this was a clean break. But that was a pretty big blow. That's about my only takes probably from Saturday. I wasn't too locked in as the day went on. But Sunday, woke up ready to watch some NFL football. Pittsburgh, Tennessee, everything I want in an NFL game. I say it all the time. I watch football for several reasons. Like, I love the two coaches and just the tactical side of the sport. It's, you know, it's an intellectual game, despite being a very violent game. And I love the violence of football. You know, for as great as Sunday night was, it gets a little 7-on-7 for me. Now, I enjoyed the game. Now, granted, I had the over in the Sunday night game. But I'd rather see kind of an old school dudes getting blasted on every play. And Tennessee and Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh brings the heat. And I think Tennessee, like, it's pretty clear. I'd say Kansas City is the best team in the league. I'd put Pittsburgh number two. If Pittsburgh's the second best team in the league, it's pretty clear the Titans are damn good too. And Derrick Henry is just a star. I love Vrabel. That was a very, very good showing. When they easily could have tapped out because Pittsburgh was kind of dominating earlier. But I just love the physicality of that game. And just, I mean, it felt like round two of the playoffs. It was awesome. I mean, this is an impressive little stretch. Or, I mean, we'll see how impressive it is. Pittsburgh plays the Ravens this week. I think it's in Baltimore. But that game was fun. I mean, we had to wait for it because the corona test with Tennessee. So it eventually came, and it definitely lived up to the hype for me. The Browns, you know, I tweeted something early in that game that, you know, if you just watch the quarterbacks, there's a chance that if you're just talking about talent, Baker Mayfield might be the least talented player for a starting quarterback in the league, all 32. Now, you could argue a couple guys at the bottom, but he's a bottom five talent. Not a great athlete, not a great arm. And everyone's like, oh, he beat the Bengals. Yeah, they're the Bengals. I mean, they're going to win two games max this season. They suck. Now, Joe Burrow, stud. Covered every spread this year. I think he pushed week one, but he's an excellent player. Like, it's just eye-opening how good he is, given how shitty his offensive line is. If I was a Bengal fan, I couldn't wait for this offseason and just to keep building around Joe Burrow. And the Browns, their playoffs this weekend. They beat the Raiders. I just don't see how they're not a playoff team. They'd be 6-2. I mean, they probably won't beat the Browns or the Ravens or the Steelers this year, but it won't matter. Because you're 6-2, you basically can go, they could probably go 3-5 the second half of the season and get that seventh wild card spot. Because they'd have the tiebreaker over the Raiders. Raiders would be 3-4. The three playoff spots would be either be the Ravens or the Steelers, who doesn't win the division, and the Browns and the Colts. That'd be your playoff teams right there. You know, your wild card teams, excuse me. Then the Bills, Chiefs, and Titans, and then, like I said, the winner of the Steelers and the Ravens, whoever wins the division. So that'd be the playoffs. It's pretty crazy. I mean, the Browns can borderline solidify themselves as a playoff team this year. And I think that it's going to be the hard part is, and this gets back to Baker, they could do that without really beating anyone good. You know, they really could. I don't necessarily consider the Raiders good, but, you know, if they get swept by the Ravens and the Steelers, I think they would be heavy underdogs, obviously, in the wild card. But it's, listen, the Browns make the playoffs. Everyone should rejoice. That's a huge step forward for the franchise. The Lions, now, I guess they have a good win over the Cardinals, but they're somehow 3-3. Like, you just watch them, Stafford. You know, I don't think they're going to be good enough on D, but I don't think they're going to be the complete train wreck that we once thought. I had a little cash on them too, so it was cool to see that moment. I don't know. I haven't seen any Patricia's quotes. You know, he's Belichick, so he probably wouldn't admit it. If they told their defender to pretend to tackle him and, you know, kind of mentally psych him out so he could score. Obviously, Todd Gurley, if he could do it over again, would have stopped. I think it's hard. Sometimes your instincts take over. But letting him score, you don't sometimes see that, was 100% the right play. We talked a little bit about the Sunday night game and Russ and just the Seattle's defense. But I've talked about it before, that graphic last Monday night of Kyler Murray being 42-0 in high school. And a bunch of people in Texas had tweeted at me who said they saw him in high school, thought he was the best high school quarterback in the history of the state, which is really saying something. When you factor in how short he is, it's one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. I mean, that guy is so fucking talented, it's stupid. His athleticism, his speed, his arm talent, his arm strength, his accuracy when he's in rhythm, he's box office. You know, I mean, he really is. I liked him in college. Who didn't? I mean, it was hard to watch him and not think he was a big-time talent. Beside Cliff Kingsbury, though, I don't know if anyone thought he'd be this good. Like, he's eye-popping where you just watch him, you go, that's like what a Pro Bowler looks like. And one thing's pretty clear is the way they handled the Josh Rosen deal. There was never going to be a right way to handle it. You would take Kyler Murray over Josh Rosen 7 days a week and 7 million times on Sunday. I mean, it's probably the easiest deal they'll ever do. And they nailed it, and it changed their franchise. Now, we'll see. I mean, I still don't trust them when it comes to the Rams, when it comes to Seattle, when it comes to the Niners. When they just play random games, I feel better about them than I do the Cardinals. And you've seen, the Cardinals have lost to the Lions. They got killed by the Panthers. But I do think the Cardinals play well against the NFC West. Beat the Niners week one at home. Just beat Seattle. I think they'll probably, at minimum, split with the Rams. Like, they're going to go probably at worst 3-3 in the division. There's a chance they go 4-2. So it just, can they go 6-4 in their out-of-conference games? And they get the NFC East, but that's the thing. Like, if you told me the Washington team or one of the random NFC East teams beats them, they kill the Cowboys. But the Eagles, I'd believe it. But if they can take care of business against the NFC East, probably a playoff team. And I would have to eat my words a little bit. Now, their defense is awful. Isaiah Simmons, as I was texting with buddies in the league, I mean, all of my friends thought he was the most overrated prospect in a long, long time. And when I say overrated prospect, I mean the hype on a guy that was clearly going to go probably in the top 10 that I had buddies that said, like, I wouldn't have taken him in the first couple rounds. And he struggles to get on the field. Now, he did make a nice play against Russ, that pick. But the biggest beef against him is he doesn't have a position. He's not physical and instinctive enough to be like a middle linebacker, you know, like a Fred Warner, despite being a good athlete. And he's kind of stiff where he can't just play deep safety. And, you know, you need a really dynamic coordinator to use him. And I see people tweeting like, well, they use Buda Baker. Like, Buda's just a more natural, instinctive. He's a safety. He has a position. Isaiah Simmons could not do what Buda Baker does. And Buda Baker is good. I didn't realize. I feel like I've watched, like, at minimum half the Cardinals snaps this year, and every other play, the guy dominates. That guy is a badass. Huge Buda Baker fan here. That's probably, I don't, I guess there's, what are you going to say about the Cowboys? I mean, I've said my piece. I get a lot of DMs, like, why do people in the national media keep talking about the Cowboys? What we do is pretty simple. You know, if you have a television show or a radio show, a national show, you talk about the biggest brands because that gets the most amount of people. You wouldn't spend time talking about the Tampa Bay Rays when you can talk about the Yankees or the Dodgers. You know, at the end of the day, push comes to shove, that's the best part of the NFL. Like, you can talk about smaller markets because Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, like, they're national brands, but the Cowboys do resonate with a lot of people in America. And there are a lot of people. The Cowboys have a large quantity of fans. It's just basic business. If you want the most people to listen to you, you talk about the thing that most people like, you know, you know, or are passionate about. And the Cowboys do have a huge fan base, like Ohio State. I mean, I bet Ohio State, you know, I've said this before, probably is like a top 7 or 8 football brand, including the NFL in America. And it's pretty clear the ones that are, right? It's the Cowboys. It's the thing about the Packers, despite being a small brand, they have a huge, huge market. It's why the Yankees and LeBron. And I actually think the LeBron thing has jumped the shark, and you see the NBA ratings in the tank. LeBron has now been like such a public superstar for so long. I think people are just tired of him. Like, his topics bore me. They bore me, and I like basketball. But you're going to talk LeBron, I'm going to change channel. I've been listening to it for 17 years. I think he's one of the best players I've ever seen, but I just don't give a shit like that his kid smoked a joint. And like the moment that happens, all these I unfollowed Bleacher Report like a week ago. It's the best thing I ever did. Like, if you guys tweet out one more picture of what LeBron's backyard looks like, I was going to puke. I've unfollowed it, and I feel like I feel liberated. I feel great. I mean, their tweets are just so stupid. And yeah, the Cowboys stink. Okay, let's go a little Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. Slide up in those DMs. Get on this little thing we like to call a podcast. And yeah, we'll go from there. Okay, I told this guy that I would answer his question, Dylan, this week because I did not answer it last week. Updated my question for the pod. So this Dallas defense might be the worst defense I've ever seen. Apparently, forgetting how to play football is a symptom of COVID in Texas. Trying to be realistic and optimistic here, and I predict we will go 5-11 and end up with a top 10 pick. I optimistically assume Jerry will do the right thing and can Mike Nolan. Who are your realistic DC options for Dallas? And what do you think with that pick? Ideally, the offensive issues with Dallas sort themselves out with the return of the offensive linemen. Defense needs free agents. Draft help, so what do you do? Thanks again for taking the time. No problem, buddy. I think the main issue, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, is you're not Mike Nolan, who I said was the number one problem. And, you know, I'll take a little victory lap. Again, it's not like I was in college when he was the coach of the Niners. It's like, have we followed football? Mike Nolan hasn't been a defensive coordinator in over a decade. No one was making him the defensive coordinator. He's just not a good coach. And he wanted to change the scheme. Like, it wasn't going to work. Now, I'll be the first to admit, I didn't think it was going to be this bad. I just thought that they would, I mean, to be honest, I probably thought they'd win 8 or 9 games and their defense would just be below average. Never thought it would look like this. I think what Jerry has to be doing, and I've talked about it before, is the mistakes in business are really costly. And anyone listening in smaller businesses know that sometimes you just can't overcome them, so you almost have to write them out because you can't afford stuff. And, you know, it's why Fortune 500 companies always typically have the money to make up for mistakes, but they're just the Excel spreadsheet. They don't want to lose money, that sometimes they get into worse situations because they don't cut bait. Jerry, it's pretty black and white. Money is no issue for Jerry, yet he's watching Mike McCarthy be one of the worst head coaches in the league. What does Mike McCarthy do? He doesn't call the offensive plays. He obviously has nothing to do with the defense. I thought Mike McCarthy was a solid head coach. I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I'm like, listen, Rodgers, you know, this intellectual elite who's a great player, but just, you know, they had a falling out. You know, I know that article said that Rodgers thought he was a meathead. It's like, listen, we all, for whatever reason, every single person listening has people that have worked with that they just don't like for whatever reason. Boss, coworker, whatever. And sometimes the longer you're around someone, the more you hate them. So I was just like, you know, I think Rodgers is the more talented of the two, but let's just let this play out. I think Mike's a solid head coach. I don't think that anymore. I think Mike's a terrible head coach. I just watch his team every week, and I'm not even judging them off like plays or scheme. I'm just judging them off effort. It's just a lifeless, effortless group. That hit on Andy Dalton, no one caring. Does anyone even like each other in the locker room? Now, fairness to Mike, he doesn't pick the players. the owner does, who's also the GM. Cowboys are in just a terrible spot. I mean, they really are. I don't really know what to do. They're just in a terrible spot. Big fan of the pods. Listen religiously. Fellow ag business major here from Colorado State. I feel like the Broncos don't get the credit as one of the best franchises in the NFL. I know they suck lately, and I know I'm biased, but I think they should be a top five programs of all time in the NFL. They've won 3 Super Bowls, and they've played in 8 of them. Considering they've only had 9 losing seasons in the history, I think they should be considered one of the best franchises in football, but don't hear anything about them from NFL media giving them the praises. They give it to like the Steelers and the Ravens and other franchises praise, understandably, but I don't hear much other about the Broncos. One of the best quarterbacks of all time in Elway and one of the most underrated owners in Pat Bowlen. Just wanted to know your thoughts on Denver as far as a top 5 NFL franchise of all time. Also, who are your top 5 NFL franchises? Yeah, I mean, listen, the Denver Broncos are an elite franchise. Denver, badass place to live. Like you said, ton of history. You don't lose that much. You won 2 Super Bowls with Elway. You got back again with Peyton. You won another one. Peyton's last year in the league. Like, the franchise is badass. They're just going through a rough time. Their team looks terrible right now. Now, they've had a bunch of injuries, but yeah, I think it's a big-time franchise. I don't know, what are we basing big-time like franchises off of? Like history, how much money they make, how popular they are. You know, I think if you told me that you could go work for the Denver Broncos as like a head coach or the GM, I think that'd be a badass job. Now, would you want to be the head coach of this Denver Bronco team? Probably not. You got to answer to John Elway, who is the most famous player in the history of the franchise. And I've always supported John Elway when a lot of people were shitting on him. Like, I think he's pretty good at his job. But I don't know if he's the easiest guy to work with, being the head coach. He sits in the box and listens to, or at least he did before. I haven't really seen the Broncos play this year. But I remember with Vance Joseph, he'd be in the coach's box listening. It's like, bro, you're not Al Davis here. So I think that element in the franchise is a little tough. My top 5 franchises, I mean, I don't know. The Packers, the Steelers. The Ravens have only been doing it 20 years. But if I bring up the Patriots, they've really only been good for 20 years. You know, growing up for the first 20 years of my life, the Niners were kicking the shit out of everybody. So, I think there are 10 franchises that are well-run, that make a bunch of money, that have huge... Part of it is having huge fan bases because you can make a lot of money, right? Like the Niners have a way bigger fan base than the Seattle Seahawks. But if you just look at the last 10 years, Seattle's been way better than the Niners. But the Niners make more money than them, bigger market. You know, the Cowboys, who don't win, make more money than everybody. The Packers, who don't have that big of a market, who I've been to Raider games and Niner games against the Packers. I swear to God, it was majority Green Bay Packer fans. Packer fans, they have a massive fan base. Same with the Steelers. I've been to both Steeler games at both those places too, and they sell out. So, I think those two franchises are big-time franchises. I think the Patriots became that with Tom Brady. Now, do they maintain it if they suck? We'll see. Because their history is not like, you know, the Cowboys, the Niners, you know, a team like that, the Steelers. It just kind of started in 2001. I'm biased, but I work for the Eagles. I know they're having a tough year, but just in terms of the way they're run, the money they make, the power in a city that's a top 5 or 6 market in the league, they're big time. I mean, the Giants, when I was in the NFL, they won a Super Bowl. But they've fallen on really, really hard times. I mean, I think we could argue 10 franchises, depending on the year and how things are going. You know, the Steelers just, they're always good. The Steelers are consistently always good. And for the most part, the Packers, you know, once Ron Wolf got there in like 92, 93, they've been pretty consistently good since, you know, I was like in fifth grade. And I'm 36 and bald now. So those franchises, and the Steelers probably would be the cream of the crop. Just consistently. I mean, they've had 3 coaches in like franchise history. To me, they feel like Ohio State football or something. They just don't have down years. When are you going to give us the story on getting the boot from Collins podcast? It's not getting the boot from Collins podcast. You guys will know here in the near future. It's not a bad thing. I just need you to go subscribe to the 3 and Out podcast by itself. I appreciate that. You'll figure out why, and it'll be cool. And we'll laugh about it. We won't really, because I don't know any of you guys. But you listen, you can DM me, and we'll shoot the shit about it. Love the show and the takes. All I keep hearing is teams that may trade a first-round pick for Darnold. The Cardinals were only able to get a 62nd pick for Rosen, which is basically a third-round pick. Darnold is 11-19 as a starter and soon to be on an 0-16 team. Not sure why teams would give up a first-round pick for a quarterback who has done dog shit. I'm a Steelers fan, and that is what people are saying the Steelers should do. I saw last year what life without Ben looks like, and I just don't think Darnold is the answer. Thoughts? Well, I think everyone in the league, first off, most people didn't love Rosen coming out. He was a very polarizing prospect. So a big thing when a guy like Darnold or any young player gets traded is you're basing a lot of it off is a guy like Sam Darnold, if the Steelers, if the Colts, the Niners, whoever, were to be aggressive for Sam Darnold, you'd be basing a lot of that for how much you love Sam Darnold in the draft process and what you thought he would have been on your team because he's still 23, 24 years old. And you'll just point at the Jets as being the village idiots. Kind of what the Dolphins did. I would imagine the Dolphins like Josh Rosen. Here's the thing. Most of the league did not. My friends in the NFL did not like him. He also had some attitude, just some personal issues. It wasn't like bad character, but it wasn't. Sam Darnold was great character. Really good talent. Now, he had to be molded, and he went to the Jets, who are just a dumpster fire. Now, I'm with you. I don't know what the exact value would be. If you're the Steelers, and let's say you go to the AFC Championship game. Let's just go a hypothetical here. And you lose. And you go, okay, we're drafting 28th. So 28, 29, 30, 31. So you'd be drafting 29. 29, 30, 31, 32 are the last four picks. And let's just say that's the pick, 29. You go, well, it's Corona. I only got like 8 games of data on all these prospects. Some of them didn't even play. I don't have a great feel for this draft class. Ben is telling me, you know, he's probably got 1 year left. Now, Ben, I could see acting a little like Favre. But I think when you watch him against the Titans, you know, he throws a couple bad plays. He has moments where he really looks his age. But he's still, he's an all-time great. So, all-time greats, even when they're at like 80%. I mean, shit, I watched Peyton Manning. I went to 2 games that last year. He couldn't throw it from me to the wall, and I could touch the wall right here. He was awful, but he was so smart that the first couple drives of the game, he could scheme up. And Roethlisberger is way better than that, but he's clearly nowhere near what he was like in 13, 14, 15. Like when I got in the league in like 10, 11, 12, I mean, he was a star. So I just think you need to prepare. So could you trade, does it make sense for the Steelers to trade a first-round pick for him when he wouldn't even play on your team next year? I don't know if that makes much sense because you have to pick up his fifth-year option, but next year he wouldn't. He was a third pick in the draft, so he doesn't make, I mean, it's not like he's making $800,000. I would imagine he's making $5 or $6 million. Steelers have some cap issues, I'm sure, too. Ideally, you'd like to get him for a second-round pick. Part of it's the competition, because if the Colts have a much better second-round pick, they can just offer their second-round pick. Who would the Jets take? Their second-round pick or the Steelers' second-round pick? Well, you just take the better pick. It's just all about market value. To me, a first, you know, I'm a big believer of this when you want to live somewhere. Like, if that's where you're going to live, and you're going to live there for a while, and you know you're going to live there for a while, like, overpaying for a house, if that's the house you want, like, you live there. I think people do get caught up. Like, if you're flipping houses, I was hanging out with this dude that flips houses this weekend. He is so unemotional about the houses. He looks at a house like you and me look at a sandwich. It means nothing to him. Flips it within 30, 45 days. He's crushing it. Doing awesome. Great. Really impressive young. He's like a year older than me. He's a really impressive guy. But if you're going to live in a house, like, who gives a shit if you got to overpay a little bit? You're going to live there, especially if you have kids and you have a good yard, you got a lot of rooms, whatever you need. I think people kind of overthink that sometimes. Like, yeah, when I bought this condo, I was like, you know, I want to live here the rest of my life. You kind of try to play the market, you know, even though I paid way more than the asking price. But that was just Bay Area real estate at the time, which I just saw something on the internet today that the Bay Area in California in general, the last 3 years, mass exodus. Hard to blame people. You know, eventually, you start taxing people that make $50,000, 9%. You know, eventually they're going to say, see ya. But that's a whole nother discussion. I just think if you like the quarterback, you got to be aggressive. Because like you said, you saw no Ben last year, and it's a miserable fucking feeling to have no quarterback. Awful. It'd be the equivalent of like any team. If you ever watch a baseball team, whoever your favorite baseball team is, and if we got a lot of younger listeners, I don't know if you watch baseball. If your team can't pitch and your bullpen is bad, you just watch the same thing over and over and over again. You're like, I can't do this. And when you watch a football team with a bad quarterback, it's like puke. You know, I'd rather watch a movie than two bad quarterbacks play a football game. I can't. Like, it was tough watching Nick Foles tonight. It really was. I think the key is, if you like him, you just got to be aggressive to get him. Now, is he good enough? I like him, but I'll be honest. Like, I don't feel quite as confident as I did 3 years ago. But is that the Jets? Is it him? That's the hard part. Like, this is why I do a podcast now. This is why I don't work in the NFL. I don't know. I could see both ways. I wouldn't be probably that confident doing it. And I'd say the Steelers, you know, I think there were rumors last year they didn't really like Jameis, so I couldn't see them doing that. I don't know what quarterback they'd be interested in. Did you hear the tension between Romo and Nance in the booth today? So much passive aggression. Time to bring in a new sidekick for Tony. What do you think? Who do you think would work? Weren't they doing the Niners and Pats? I wasn't super locked into the audio. I actually think my one take on Nance and Romo is Romo has really lightened Nance up. Like, I'm a big golf guy, but Nance is pretty cheesy. I mean, it's kind of a shtick. Now I like it. Again, I like the golf cheesy bullshit, but I could see where when I'm like in football mode, I'm like, Jesus, Jim, just call the fucking football game. And him and Phil, when Phil Sims was doing it was a bad broadcast. And I think bringing Tony in has really lightened them up. I actually think they have a lot of fun. Maybe I'll have to go back and watch the broadcast, because I have one thing I feel very confident at with those two guys is Tony has been really good for Jim, and Jim likes him, and they kind of really get along. Now, sometimes I think, as like a broadcast purist, which I'm not, I do think Tony kind of screws around a little bit, and I'm a huge Tony fan. Like, I wish I was friends with Tony Romo. I want to play golf with Tony Romo. I want to hang out with Tony Romo. But when I'm watching the game, like, and I don't watch that many Tony Romo games, because I watch probably more on Sundays the NFC game with the TV, because usually the Niners, they just play a lot of those 1 o'clock games. I usually have that audio on, and those guys call the AFC game, and I always have that on the second TV that just doesn't have audio. It's kind of the way my TV situation. I feel I only watch truly probably a small handful of Romo Nance games. I watch a ton of Buck Aikman's guy. And maybe at the end of the day, I'm just more of an NFC guy than an AFC guy, even though I watch a lot of Chiefs games. Feels like they do them, but maybe I mute a lot of them. I don't know. And I'm a Tony, I like Tony, but I guess I'm more of an NFC audio guy. I got to go back and look at that. But I'm telling you, I think Nance loves Tony. Maybe I'm wrong. Appreciate everyone listening. Have a great week, and come back Friday. Follow me on Instagram. Shoot me your Instagram DMs. Adios. May the peace be with you. Godspeed. See ya.